you let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Good evening, everybody. It's 7:01 p.m. With pleasured hands to take you in this time to promised lands to show you everyone is the time of the season. It's that time of the season again. Real hot. Feels good. Another 90-degree day over here. This time I actually found an hour that I can go outside and read a little bit in the sun. Felt good. I did a lot of good things today. I'm proud of myself, despite all the odds. Oh, gosh. But in any case, it's Friday night. We're wrapping this one up. A lot of things are coming to a close. Little League season's almost over. Got 2 more weeks left of that. And I don't know. It's been good. You know what I stumbled upon before I got on air that I really just wanted to go and check out? What's going on, Rumble and Roar? What's going on, Nikki? It's a tight-knit group here tonight. But before I got on the air tonight, I started looking around for some stuff. And one of them was Ray Charles' rendition of America the Beautiful. And because I believe, and I've always said it, it should be the national anthem. I think it speaks more to the geography, a little bit more just praising the earth. That is America, and not only the idea that is America as well. So I always thought that it's just such a more appropriate song, even though I don't have anything against the Star Spangled Banner, but, you know, whatever. But then I found this one piece, this video over here, which you're going to be able to hear it if you're listening to the podcast, but of course we have the link to the video in the description, so you can check that out there too. This is from Game 2 of the 2001 World Series when he sang in front of the crowd before the game in Arizona. Now, I got sucked into a couple of seconds of this, and then I decided to pause it so we can just watch it together, because this was very, very moving to me, just because, especially for me personally, 2001. Now, as a Yankee fan, as a New Yorker, I can tell you that it was enormous, an enormous year for all Americans and the world, subsequently. But, you know, whereas I was tuned into what was happening on the terrorism front, I was not conscious when it came to baseball. Now, I had been raised on baseball. My mother raised me on baseball. And it's always been in the house and around us. And even Anthony, even though Anthony only played baseball as, you know, as a young kid and maybe like rookie leagues and stuff like that, still, this was a huge part of our life. The game of baseball, huge part of our lives. The Bronx, New York, huge part of our lives. River Avenue, huge part of our lives. And, like, even as far as I remember, my first baseball game at Yankee Stadium had to have been, like, 1991 or something like that. I think I was in first grade, and the Yankees were still a real piss-poor team. And I went to see the Yankees play the Oakland Athletics at the stadium, a night game, with my mother and my grandmother. And my mother had a crush on Jose Canseco, and she would tease me about it because, of course, I didn't want to hear that my mother had a crush on anybody else except my father. So she would always tease me about it. And you know, that motherfucker hit a home run. He hit a home run at the game, and my mother rubbed my face in it. And man, oh man, I wanted to beat Jose Canseco. And of course, Jose Canseco was a Yankee for maybe about a year or so, half a year. I don't know if it was like a midseason trade or something, but he was a Yankee for a little while there. Big hulking Jose Canseco. And I'm telling you that stadium and that game means so much. And especially at the time that I was able to be there for it. I know there were better times. I know there were better times to be Yankee fans. There was no better time to be a Yankee fan than the mid-90s for kids that were growing up in the 90s. That was fantastic. But as far as baseball goes, being woven into the fabric of the country, there's so much beautiful history. Baseball history that runs parallel with the history of the world and what's going on, how many times baseball has been interrupted by war, number of things, natural disaster. We've seen the breaking of color barriers, and we've seen, unbelievable things happen. Unbelievable things happen. That's why I say it's an American pastime. It runs so parallel to American history. I mean, right to the beginning of it, to all the myths about Abner Doubleday playing the first game of baseball up near Cooperstown, New York in 1832. You know, this American baseball was with us through the Civil War. Unbelievable things to see, booms and busts in industry. So many things. I have to go back into all my sports history books. That warmed my heart to be able to get into sports and not so much obsess over the statistics and who this one was and batting average and ERA and WHIP, even though that's a little bit more of a more recent statistic. Anything like that. It doesn't matter. It's like there's a whole other history there. There's an urban history there. I've mentioned it a couple times in the show. If you have time, and I think, you know what? I'm going to write it down right now. Do I have a pen here? Remind me to watch the HBO Brooklyn Dodgers documentary again tonight at 10:30 p.m.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Thank you, Siri. Guys, watch. I forgot what it's called. It might be, I don't know, the Dodgers. I don't know. I don't know what the hell it's called. Ghosts of Flatbush. I have no clue what it is. But it's an HBO documentary. You could probably find it on Amazon Video. Go Google search it until you find it. Then go on Amazon and download it or something like that. Rent it for $2.99. It is a documentary that I think is just, I think anybody, even if you're not a baseball fan, would appreciate it. Because it's New York, it's Americana, it's a lot of great things. So check that out. But regrettably for me, around 2001, I was really not in touch with the game that I had been raised on. Now, I had a lot of holdbacks there, too, with the game, too. You know, I stopped playing baseball a little bit earlier than I wanted to, probably, just because I never felt comfortable on a team. Namely, you know, as a kid growing up, and my father was not out of the closet yet. I didn't know he was gay. Everybody else knew he was gay. I didn't, because he was my father. You know, how could that be true? And it was always uncomfortable for me doing things in a team-oriented situation, especially if it is sports-related, where, you know, the testosterone comes out to play and, you know, you got your alphas and your betas and everybody's trying to compete with each other and all that shit. I was always ready to compete on a physical level. I was definitely not built like a linebacker, that's for sure, but in baseball, that's not really that much of a contact sport, more of a finesse sport, more of a heart type of sport. You know, where it's not this, it truly is not the size of the dog in the fight, but the size of the fight in the dog. And it was just one of those things where I couldn't even, it was hard for me to concentrate on the game, just feeling ostracized from teams because I didn't have the baseball, the sports dad. You know, it was my mother that taught me how to play shortstop. She was the softball player. And that was tough for me. So eventually after a while, I didn't like the innuendos or the teasing anymore. So I just kind of played pickup games, and I didn't watch baseball a lot from about 1999 till about 2003. So the 1999 World Series, where the Yankees continued their impressive sweeping of the World Series, because they had swept into, they had 1996, they had one out from I think Game 3 onward, or Game 2 onward. And then they continued the streak into 1998. They swept the San Diego Padres four in a row. Then they swept the Braves again in nineteen ninety-nine for another four in a row. And then in 2000, they played the Mets in the Subway Series and they won in five games. Then in 2001, the Yankees get back to the playoffs. The 2001 Yankees, that was when they went through Oakland, and Jeter had that famous flip play. Let me bring it up here for you guys to see. It's Friday night. If you expected to come here and talk about Hiroshima, which we may do, because I can't stand the historical pussyfooting on that bullshit that's going on here too. But this is history as well. This is Derek Jeter's flip play. 2001, ALDS Game 3. They're in Oakland, and he's flipping to Jorge Posada to tag out Jeremy Giambi at the plate. Now, watch how Derek Jeter, this is not where a shortstop is supposed to be for a cutoff coming from right field. So he comes out of nowhere to make this miraculous play, and the Yankees go on to hold on, win, and then eventually move on into the championships versus the Arizona Diamondbacks. Okay, which had a ridiculous pitching staff that year. Watch this shit. It's 53 seconds long, but just watch how Jeter comes out of nowhere.
On base the entire season, so you're not going to run, you're not going to hit and run. You got to wait for a gapper.
That is fair down the right field line.
Shit.
Giambi on his way to third, and they're going to wave him around.
Here it comes. Look at where is it?
This is a cutoff, man. Shot it in the plate. Out of the plate. Derek Jeter with one of the most unbelievable plays you will ever see by a shortstop.
What the fuck?
Both cutoff men were missed. Jeter coming down the line, fielded with his bare hand, a shovel to Posada, and Giambi is out.
And let me tell you something.
What an unbelievable play by Jeter.
And let me tell you something. I get choked up. If we ever do a show like this, and you ever see me getting choked up for something you think is just completely ridiculous, it may be ridiculous, I don't know. But holy shit, there's nothing. That chokes me up. Chokes me up. And then, of course, they beat the Athletics. They beat the Boston Red Sox. And then they go on to face the Diamondbacks. Okay? That was another magical series, even though the Yankees ended up losing it. But this is Game 2 of the 2001 World Series. Ray Charles singing America the Beautiful. And this gets me choked up just because, A, I wasn't able to experience it. I wasn't really cognizant of it all. The series that this was, going all seven games and the magic in the Bronx that ensued and everything, the series that this was, for me to really have missed a lot of it, except the highlights, really upsets me, you know? I was really back on the horse in 2003. I'll tell you where my passion for it all exploded again. Me and my mother in the living room in October 2003, where I was celebrating the game again with the woman who taught me the game. It was amazing. One of those, see, and that's the other thing I think about people who are able to travel the world, see things, do things, go to places that I haven't been yet and may never go to. I don't know. We'll have to see. But My not having left the continent yet, not having gone to Europe, not having done anything, not having done this and that and achieved certain things, made a certain amount of money, that really does not even matter in the when you compare all of that, which are great things that I wish to do. So I'm not trying to play sour grapes to minimize it. But knowing that I have a handle on memories and experiences like that, where there was connections made, where there was history made, history witnessed, connections lost, bonds reforged. I mean, those are real human moments. And I pray that all you guys have moments like that in whatever it is leads you down any kind of passionate path. Even if you're just passionate about your fanhood of a sport or something like that, I really do hope that you're having those experiences, because I really do believe more and more those are the only real things that define how well lived a life you had. You know, and it's those things that I really believe that are the strongest parts of life. And I'm not talking about obsession over a team or anything like that. I'm talking about having healthy experiences where you just really feel good about it, you know? Watch this shit.
To honor America with the singing of America the Beautiful, please welcome the man and his soul, Mr. Ray Charles.
Now, this isn't in New York, but, you know, this is in America, right after the September 11th attacks. You just hear it in the crowd. And you know why this stuff really gets me now? Because I really do believe not only was that the very tail end, you know, 2001 was really the tail end of that Yankee dynasty, and what I think was the last really magical stretch of years in baseball and years in the country. You know, the late 90s was the last of the really good times. Wasn't there to see much of anything before that. I remember the early 90s. I have a feeling for the late 80s, even though I was, you know, 4 and 5 coming toward 1990. So that's the 90s was the last decade. And I can tell you, if that was the tail end of it, man, this was one of the last things. You don't see shit like this anymore. First of all, Ray Charles is part of a generation of Americans that, yeah, they knew very well the good and the bad side of, you know, living in modern society. Modern society. I love how people say it's not my America. America was never great. You know what? Let's talk about this for a second, because you'll see this stuff posted on internet. You'll see the keyboard warriors go at it. You'll see people on YouTube videos and all this stuff talking about, you know, America, make America great again. Well, America was never great. What the fuck is America? You can draw it up on a map. There it is. Land? Buildings? What is it? You can call America whatever you can call the United States of America whatever name you want it to. And what is it still reduced to? People. And how people interact. So America was... So then what are we talking about? Earth was never great? Okay, then everybody kill yourselves. It's over. I guess there's no... We tried. Best we can do. Earth was never great. No, just America. No, shut up. Because you failed to realize the stupidity of your own statement, of your own blanket statements. People have problems. We've always had problems. America was and still is, I think, the best idea that we've ever put forward. The best idea. And you know what? What does it boil down to? What does it all boil down to? People. How willing are you to give up the bullshit? How willing are you? I don't know. I don't think people really are that willing at all. I think they just like their stories. You know, what would you do without your crutch? Yeah, that's a big thing. What would you really do without your crutch? People have to ask themselves that question once the crutch is gone. You know, and you can blame it on a country. You can blame it on a shape that is your country. You can blame it on some kind of visual. You can project all of your bullshit onto a flag. You can project all of your, everything was done under this flag. Oh, yeah? Okay, well, then I hate the sky. You know how much atrocity was committed under that flag? Oh, you know how much atrocity was committed under this sky? I hate the sky. Fuck the sky. Fuck space, then. People projecting their bullshit onto objects and completely missing the point. I feel like that's all I'm surrounded by. But in either case, baseball is very special to me. Mixmaster Mao says America is great, the greatest country on the planet, and became great through good things. Hopefully I get to articulate that in my last essay of the year. Hey, send that essay over. I'd like to read it. Nikki says, it seems like we had more of a desire to be awesome. Now no one knows enough to give a shit and try. They'd rather complain. You're damn right. Hey, Matt, what's going on, dude?
What's up, bro?
I saw you slip in. How you feeling?
Fucking deflated, bro.
I feel deflated. I'm
fucking
beaten.
Deflated.
I'm beaten, bro.
Yeah.
I'm beaten. You know, I look at I've been reading. I'm reminding myself, going through all my books, going through articles posted online, and go through everything. Because I really want to look at all this, you know. Of course, we had the president went off to Japan and visited Hiroshima on Memorial Day weekend, talking about all this. Now people are debating actively whether or not he went out there to, in so many words, apologize for dropping the atomic bomb, whereas I don't give a fuck. I seriously don't give. I know some people are very passionate about it. But I really don't give a shit about debating about the ambiguous nature of Barack Obama's trip. Obviously, wherever he goes, he is an agent for anti-American sentiment. He is a spreader of anti-American sentiment, and he has done nothing but divide up the country. Any kind of an unbiased eye can see we are clearly not being led around by a patriotic man in any sense. He's an ideologically driven man. He's part of a greater scheme. I do not think that he is a ringleader or even smart enough to be a ringleader. Just like I didn't believe George Bush was smart enough to orchestrate 9/11.
Fool me once.
Okay. I don't believe it. Not to say that I don't have my doubts about official stories and still have big question marks over certain things. And we'll be talking about that in later episodes with Liam Sheff. Liam Sheff's going to come on to talk about 9/11 too. As well as I'd like to talk to Jeremy Reese, formerly on the network. He had a YouTube channel called The Alien Scientist, and he would talk. And, you know, he talked from a purely he's a scientist himself, and he would talk about 9/11 and UFOs and futurism from a purely scientific standpoint. He's very interesting as well. I have to have him on the air. Also coming on the air soon is a good friend of ours, Angela Nicastro, who is a master astrologer. Okay. And I've known her for years. And she is... There's a lot of people out there that I just roll my eyes at. But I love talking to Angela about my life, about the universe and our purpose here from an astrological standpoint. She's very, very knowledgeable. And she's a very sane, kind, amazing woman. And I can't wait to have her back on the network in general. We're looking at some time slots for her right now. Her and Ken Frazza, her trusty cohort. But she's also going to be coming on, quite frankly, which I think is going to be a really, really awesome episode. Can't wait for that. But in either case, I do find it a little odd. Matt, have you heard any of the things that President Obama was saying out there in Hiroshima, why he's out there? And
not really.
Honoring all of the war, all lives lost and stuff like that. And
I really don't care, but I mean, when you say that, it kind of sounds like you're talking about Nazis and shit like that. And the Japanese weren't nice people.
No. To be honest, the Japanese, the Nazis.
At that time.
Let me tell you, you have nothing but respect for the Japanese culture and what it is, you know, especially today, and their intellect, their technology, they're tremendous athletes. The Japanese are definitely up there, especially with the game of baseball.
Good at math.
Fantastic at all that stuff, dude. I mean, think about it. And you know what's been happening since World War II? It's night and day. So it's not about the Japanese people. We're talking about the government and the nation of Japan, the Empire of Japan, back in the 1930s and 40s. Okay? And their treatment of people and their enemies and their prisoners of war, the bombing and the sinking of multiple hospital ships, U.S. hospital ships, the conscription of Australian women, captured women, into Japanese military brothels as whores. I think it was Regiment 731. Hold on.
Did they ever apologize?
No, they never visited Pearl Harbor, that's for sure.
We're all sorry for attacking Pearl Harbor.
Japanese. Hold on. Unit 731.
I don't know, in my opinion, you fucking sneak attack America. I mean, they got what they deserved.
If you have time, go to and check out all of the experiments that Japanese Unit 731 carried out on U.S., Australian, and other captured POWs.
What's some of the stuff they did?
Bro? Oh, they would keep. First of all, they would disembowel them. They would study what the effect of freezing limbs was, because they couldn't do it on corpses because the decaying process would interfere. So they would freeze limbs. They would remove limbs and attach it to the other side of the body.
They were worse than the Nazis.
The Japanese, actually, they were given a lot of cover by the Nazis. The Nazis and Adolf Hitler definitely gave the Japanese a lot of cover, because, I mean, not to say that we overreacted with Hitler and the Nazi movement, not at all, but because of how things, to think of two movements, two military campaigns, and pretty much world ideologies that were being put forth and enforced through Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan and even Fascist Italy. To think of all three of those things going on at the same time in the same war, that were all equally despicable and equally damaging. I mean, the Japanese slaughtered millions, not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. They killed as many Chinese in completely, you know, with no prejudice, I mean, in completely prejudiced ways, unfeeling, not even thinking about it. We're talking about civilian deaths in China. I believe that it matches the Jewish extermination.
No, they killed more, actually.
It at least matches.
Japanese.
They killed at least 6 million Chinese civilians. You know, there's more. I mean, look at the experiments of the Japanese Unit 731. Just check some of them out. Taking out stomachs and attaching esophagus straight to the small intestine. They were carrying out everything that they wanted to.
Do you think they did
the death marches?
The natural, like, disembowelment? The way I would disembowel
rape of
someone.
Nanking? You have the famous massacres and rapes and death marches. These were animals. Animals. And they were racing for the bomb. They were not giving up. Even old ladies on the island of Japan were ordered to make weapons out of everything and be prepared to kill all foreigners. I can't stand the keyboard warriors 75 years later, when however the hell long it was, talking about what they should have done or the test bombings they should have done.
Bombing.
They had three bombs.
We had three bombs.
Test
it in the desert.
Yeah, we had three bombs. We tested one, and then we had to make an. And we almost didn't actually. Nagasaki almost didn't. The trip, the campaign almost didn't even succeed.
Yeah, well,
you know, so it's unbelievable what people can say. You know, we should have tested. We should have done this and that. They didn't surrender after Hiroshima.
Yeah, we should have dropped a third one on them.
They didn't surrender after Hiroshima. And to be honest, we were going to give them. Do you know that we were going to give them 6 days to surrender before we dropped the second bomb? But we had to cut it short to, I think, 3 days because Russia was ready to invade.
I did not know that
Russia was ready to invade Japan, and they wanted to force a surrender before Russia got their hands in any of the skirmishes out there in Japan. Can you imagine if Japan would be separated into East and West, just like Germany was? What would have happened if the Soviet bloc extended out into Japan? Can you imagine that? It'd be a completely different world. Not to mention all of the American and Japanese lives that were saved by dropping the bombs. I know there are people that call that a bullshit argument. Well, I call people's pussyfooting on an issue decades after it happened, when they wouldn't be able to fucking make a decision if they were in that situation for their life dependent on it. Absolutely not. Get the hell out of here. Most of these people can't decide what they want to watch on Netflix. They want to say that they know more than Eisenhower, than FDR and Truman and everybody else.
Truman was great, man. I mean, I wouldn't have gave him 6 days personally because our soldiers didn't have 6 days warning at Pearl Harbor.
And let me tell you something.
I dropped three bombs on him in the same day.
And you know we're not fans of FDR over here. You know we're not real big fans of FDR over here. That's for damn sure. But for Christ's sake, to think what hands we'd be putting World War II into if we were going to deal with it in a politically correct fashion. Can you imagine if we fought World War II in a politically correct way?
What language do you think we would be speaking? German, Japanese, or Russian?
I have no clue. I have no clue. I seriously have no clue.
I think maybe German.
Well, Hitler had his plan for the U.S. Hitler would have gotten to the U.S.
Well, he would have
gotten to the U.S. because London was about ready to fall. He was about ready to take England.
Yeah.
Hitler's biggest mistake was opening
France.
Well, he walked into France. France fell in 2 weeks. That was pathetic.
Please, yes, please, Hitler, come into our country.
That was completely pathetic. He did the foxtrot into France. But opening up that Eastern Front against the Soviets is what lost Germany the war. Thank God.
That's so, like, I don't understand. He's such a history and Like Napoleon, the same thing happened to Napoleon. I don't know what the fuck he did that to.
Maybe he just thought they were just that advanced, his supreme Aryan race.
Yeah, maybe. It has to be. It has to be. Let me see, what else we have here? But yeah, check out those Japanese atrocities. Just watch how what was the standard operating procedures. Okay?
Are there any videos of the bomb being dropped on Japan? Like a real video?
Yes.
There is.
Not the explosion though. I think it just, hold on. Let's see here. Rare footage of Nagasaki. Real footage. Atomic bomb. Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Okay, let's see here.
Oh, look at the brain. Death above.
That's exactly what Obama called it.
Did he really?
Yeah, he called it death from above, even though, you know.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, he said death. He called it death from above because, you know, they dropped cotton candy from above down onto Pearl Harbor. They dropped cotton candy.
See, I didn't know. They dropped Skittles. Shit like that.
When the Japanese attacked the U.S., the U.S. did not attack Japan. I understand that there are certain economic things going on there that kind of forced Japan into a fight or flight type of situation.
Is he fucking castrated or something, this guy?
Oh, yes. We're being castrated. I'm telling you, though, it's going to be overturned. We're going to turn over a new leaf in this country.
I hope so.
We're going to turn over a new leaf in this country. My God.
One where the big topic of the day is not bathrooms. Who can use bathrooms?
I just want to see strength come back to people. Okay, I'm not looking for strength to come back. Strength to come back to government. All government is unbelievable amounts of strength and influence. But I'm saying I want to see strength come back to people. Reason come back to people. I don't understand why we are so inclined to every step of the way. When we look back at where we came from and what we did to get to where we are right now, why we need to revise history. If history led us to right now in the way we're thinking and what we're philosophizing and where we're going, then why are we trying to reinterpret history? Why are you trying to reinterpret history if it got us right where we are? We make decisions going forward based on the information and the experience we've already gone through. That's the only thing that brings knowledge, is experience. That's what history is. So why are we changing history? Why are we whitewashing history and sweeping it under the rug? Why are we trying to get rid of the heroes of the past? Why, you know, maybe they have been misunderstood. Let's understand them better. Why get rid of them? That's the weirdest thing. Get rid of everything. Even the destruction of pop culture heroes like Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan will never be destroyed to me, brother.
He's not going to be destroyed for many people, but he is.
Hulk Hogan is a symbol of America to me. It's part of my childhood, brother.
Let's go on a really quick break. Be right back.
Bulletproof has always been about identifying and taking advantage of every single thing that makes people perform better. When you drink it, you just don't care about food. No cravings, no hunger for 4 to 6 hours, and you feel a kind of mental clarity that you probably haven't felt in years.
Have you heard of Bulletproof coffee? I tried it today. I feel pretty good.
Is
I think this is footage of maybe San Francisco. Turn of the century. Obviously, last century. All right, so with that being said, let's take some calls. I mean, it's 7:40. I want to hear some thoughts you guys have. 20 minutes until we get off the air. I'm definitely going to get off on time tonight. No overtime for me. I'm getting jittery again. I need to start hydrating for tomorrow's morning workout, because the Saturday workouts are fucking terrible as it is, and it's just going to get hotter and hotter now. I'm already looking forward to my acai bowl that I'm going to have after my workout tomorrow, because I'm going to be so spent and so beat up. Oh, God. I'm just going to shovel that shit down. Another beautiful acai bowl. Gadget dog, eat, man. Dude, I forgot to eat before I got here. You know what's funny? Before I got here, what was I doing? Oh, I was writing. I'm almost done with a short story. First short story that I'm about to publish in a while. So you guys will be able to get that on my Amazon publisher's page. That's going to be fun. I'm right around there, right around where I want to be. I think I have about 1,500 more pages. 1,500 more words to write. Yeah, 1,500 more pages. I'm writing It Part 2. It Returns. Yeah, I know. I need to stop forgetting to eat. But I just get lost. Had a good day, though. Good day. I got some work done in the morning. Had some clients in. I got all my network stuff done. I got some thoughts collected for this. I listened to some talk radio, some podcasts. I read for an hour. I'm starting to reread the Federalist Papers. And I read part one tonight. Let me see. What was Federalist number one?
You should see my fucking day today and tomorrow.
I should read a Federalist paper once a day until we get through all... What was it? 80? Something? What did you say, Matt?
My fucking day I had today and my day. Dude, I'm definitely working until 8 o'clock tomorrow.
Really?
I have to now. Because I got another raise.
Well...
Do you want to know how much?
How much?
Should I say it on air?
It's up to you. Who cares?
$1,100.
A month?
A week.
On top of everything else?
No, that's everything. That's what I get now.
Oh, dude. Well, you're
not enough, bro.
I don't know how that's not enough for you, man. I would be living like a sultan.
I'm like America, bro. I have bad spending habits.
Yeah, well, that's I don't know, man. I will respect you more once you get some better habits. I'll respect you a lot more, because I would live like a sultan with that money. You have no clue what I have made enough without taking any handouts, with nothing like that. I'll never ever take a dime of something I don't deserve. I swear to Christ, you have no clue what I have made do with. You, $1,100 a week, I would be a fucking sultan. Sultan. I'd be unstoppable. I would be unstoppable. Literally unstoppable. Man, oh man. Man, oh man. Podcasting God. I work hard. I'm working hard to do stuff for myself here. If you please, bring me a sponsor that sees the merit in someone who goes live every night, has decent things to say, doesn't have all the answers, doesn't have some of the answers, but enjoys asking questions, wants to bring people in, does the work. I show up, I'm on time. I think we put together good shows. I think we've got our finger to the pulse of important things. We've got good ideas for the future. Please, podcasting God, send me a sponsor that says, you know what, I'll give you $1,000 a month. Or two sponsors that say $500 a month and we'll fund your entire operation. Do you know what I would do with $1,000 extra? Oh my God. Oh my God. Hey, Rumble and Roar, you know what? That's a really fucking good idea. Because Anthony's actually about to start really upping his attention on his Patreon account for 10-second songs. I should make a Patreon for Quite Frankly.
A what?
A Patreon. It's pretty much a site. You can set up an account where people can contribute toward the ongoing pursuits of certain types of content creators. So people that you like on YouTube, or a movie maker you like, a filmmaker, this, you know, short filmmaker, whatever the hell it is, podcaster, all that. If you like them, you can pledge $1, $5, $10 a month, maybe even more, but you get perks in return and all that stuff. Yeah, my Patreon would quickly get up to maybe $25 a month. I think I have enough friends out there to get 20 people pledging $1. I think that's, see, that's the, and to be honest with you, Rumble, I really, really appreciate you suggesting it, because it lends to me the idea that you would be one of those very gracious people that would drop $2 in the bucket. And that's fantastic. But I know what that would look like. And I know that Patreon shows how many contributors are there. And I don't want anybody to see how very little support I would have. I wouldn't want it. So we'll see. We'll see. I would have to spin it in a way that I wouldn't feel guilty taking people's money. Like, I would want that to go to a very specific thing for the show. You know, I would want to get sponsors from business sponsors to actually be a way that I could compensate myself for my time. But if I did a Patreon, I would probably feel most comfortable doing that if that money was going toward funding a very certain type of thing. You know? And maybe even, I don't know, it would have to be something for profit. It couldn't be a charitable donation, because you need to have special filings done and all that to take money to then go and be a third party to send off. You know, I would never be able to take money from you guys and send off elsewhere. But maybe to fund something very particular, like maybe enough money to, I don't know, bring on a producer. Somebody who's going to go out and do booking, to go out and every couple of weeks send another letter to Rand Paul, send another letter to people like Jesse Ventura even. You know, just things, you know, Arlie Ermey. I would love to talk to Arlie Ermey. I'd love to talk to a number of different people. YouTube personalities. I know we can probably get to YouTube personalities easily through our connections right now at YouTube, but still, shit like that. Gadget Doc said 10 people at $10 would be $1,200 in income a month. That's not true.
It's $120.
It's $120 a month. Don't tease me. It's $100. Oh, no, it's 100. 10 times 10. It's 100. Income a year, you maybe? Wait, am I reading? Wait, hold on. I'm sorry, everybody that's listening right now to the podcast. I'm reading the chat room. I don't know what the hell's going on. 10 people at $10 would be $1,200 a month in income. $1,000 in donations at 50 cents. A thousand donations of 50 cents a piece. Oh, Gadget Doc says he was thinking a year. Yeah, well, if you can give me the lump sum in January, I can do a lot more with that. $100, holy shit. But I, you know what? It's $100 that wasn't there before. And I do appreciate you guys talking like that. We got. I'll think about it. Definitely should do it. But I should think about what that would fund in particular. I think it would be cool if you guys contributed toward a very specific type of thing or a very specific operation of the, or maybe like the merchandising and maybe merchandise 1 month, or maybe it's just a slush fund for merchandise and then for marketing. We could do something like that. I don't know. And you guys get perks from it. I just wasted all, like, maybe 8 to 10 minutes of the last 10 minutes of anybody that's listening right now. I'm so sorry. That was a terrible tangent. I may even edit all of that out before I upload the podcast. That was terrible. I'm sorry I put you all through that. Let's look at one thing before we get off the air. I thought that this was hilarious. Oberlin students, okay, at Oberlin College, they want to abolish midterms and any grades below C. Okay, so all the people, all the kids that never had what it took to be in college in the first place and should not have been pushed in there for by some kind of mandate or quota, now they want to make sure that any grades below a C don't exist and that midterms can go away.
So no one can fail. You never fail.
Right.
Isn't that an all-female college?
Students at Oberlin College are asking the school to put academics on the back burner so they can better turn their attention to activism. No. See, activism doesn't pay. What you're taking part in is not activism. Okay? You're a disillusioned. You're actually asking an institution that used to be dedicated to education, free thought, the challenging yourself with new ideas, foreign ideas, throwing it into the mixing pot there, toss it around a little bit, debate it, test logic, see what happens, grow, become a person, and be prepared for a specialized form of work that you've already been drawn to college to go and pursue? No. Now college is high school part two. Everybody has a right to go there. Doesn't matter what your grades are, you're going to be pushed in. We've got ethnic background quotas. People are not taken in for the work that they do, more so the way that they look and whose family they come from. This college is shit. Okay? And that doesn't. And I'm sorry that I have to say something like that because I have so many great people that work in the college, the collegiate systems, as teachers, as administrators, people who do care. But I actually feel bad for those people while I stand by my initial statement of college is shit. It has become shit. Okay, just like the people. The people of the country are becoming shittier and shittier. The institutions that we have are becoming shittier and shittier. It's not a matter of America not ever being great or this is being unfair. It's a matter of the gumption and the people. The gumption that the people have. The outlook that the people have. The willingness to work and to overcome things. To think through things. To not explode and crumble under pressure. More than 1,300 students at the Midwestern Liberal Arts College have now signed a petition asking that the college get rid of any grade below C for the semester, and some students are requesting alternatives to the standard written midterm examination, such as a conversation with a professor in lieu of an essay. Can we just have a conversation to show you how much we haven't learned because we were out blocking highways? Blocking highways, these are wastes. The students say that between their activism work, which is not work, you're not doing work. It is not work. It is not working. Even if it was work, it's not working. Your work isn't working. You're not going to succeed. Not going to succeed. That's six syllables. A lot of us worked alongside community members in Cleveland who were protesting, worked alongside or through bottles. Megan Bautista, a co-liaison of Oberlin student government, said, referring to the protests surrounding the shooting death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice by a police officer in 2014, we needed to organize a campus as well. It wasn't sustainable to keep driving 40 minutes away. A lot of us started suffering academically. Good, because you weren't doing anything in there worthwhile anyway. The only bad thing is that you wasted somebody else's money, because you sure as hell aren't paying for any of it. You sure as hell aren't paying for any of it. Just like you sure as hell didn't need to do much to go in there except spin the wheel, and boom, you got accepted. I'm sure I'm reducing that a little bit too much, but I don't give a fuck anymore. This is ridiculous. And everybody has their token children that were shot by stray bullets of police or because they thought that somebody was reaching for a gun, even though it's more and more becoming true. And, you know, it's amazing that they have their character names. Everybody knows. Everybody, if you're a real big devout fan of any of these movements, you have your four or five go-to names. And you have your go-to narratives, many of which have been debunked. And you'll avoid... You'll avoid websites like HeyJackass.com. You'll avoid websites like HeyJackass.com. We'll show you where the real killing and the real death is taking place. Here's HeyJackass.com right now. This year to date in Chicago, shot and killed 224, shot and wounded 1,230, total shot 1,454, total homicides 250. May, the month of May to date, total homicides 58, total shot 327, shot and wounded 272, shot and killed 55. Let's go jump on those police. Let's go jump on those police as if it really even, it pales in comparison. I'm right alongside you when it's very, very obvious in these situations that A, individual rights are being violated just by many of the confrontations and the communication we have with police. Many of the opportunities to being confronted by a police officer should not exist because we shouldn't be so monitored and regulated. Okay, police officers shouldn't be looking for 20 bags of weed. Okay, they shouldn't, the things that we are micromanaged on creates reasons that these things even happen. The cigarette tax. And then, of course, you see your police brutality. And it happens. And you have to just deal with it on an individual basis. You have to deal with it. What's really here? What's on the books? Why are we continuing this? What are we really going to change? And when are we going to start paying attention to where the real death is happening? I don't know, but Oberlin students are going to find out. They're going to find out, I bet you that much. You know, we're paying for a service. We're paying for our attendance here. We need to be able to get what we need in a way that we can actually consume it, student Zakia Acey told New Yorker. Because I'm dealing with having been arrested on campus or having to deal with the things that my family are going through because of larger systems. Look at what system? Oh, you know, larger systems. We'll get into the details some other time when I can go through my thesaurus and my dictionary of terms and catchphrases that I can string together to make a nonsensical statement that just is like a nonsensical blanket statement about everything, and larger systems at play here against my family. Like she's off crusading while the family's at home, it chained up in a basement somewhere waiting for her to return and be their victor. God, the self-aggrandizement, the flags that people wave, the things that people think that they're doing when they just look like idiots. Having to deal with all that, I can't produce the work that they want me to. then don't go to college. Everybody, if you want to go to college and you expect the college to allow you to not go to class because you're off, you know, I don't know, setting something on fire, don't go to college. Don't go to college. You can always go. You can always go. Okay? Activism doesn't pay. And if you're already getting swept up in this shit in high school, then just don't go to college. Put it on the back burner and go back when you've had some sense beat into you. I don't know. I don't know. That's it for tonight, everybody. That's it for tonight. That's it. All right, guys, have a fantastic evening. Stay cool. Have a fantastic Memorial Day. Be reverent. See you soon.